Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. This is Stephen Zimmer coming to you live out of Lexington, Kentucky for episode number 240, if you are keeping score. And tonight I've got two great co-hosts and a great show coming up for you, everybody. Joining me out of Tennessee, you got two from Tennessee, double shot of Tennessee whiskey tonight. Yes, yes indeed. Got Daniel Dark and the return of the one, the only, the big dreamer, Rose Marie Machario. Welcome, my friends.
Hi.
There she is. This is fantastic.
Rose is in the house.
Yes, it's Rose, everybody. Yeah, we have not heard from Rose in a little while. Thrilled to have you back on the show tonight, and picked a good one because we're actually going to be unveiling a book on the air tonight, which will be fun. But how have you been? You've got to catch us up on all things Rose.
Oh my gosh, what's been up with you?
It's
lots of insanity and not in the good kind sometimes.
I understand life. That too well.
Yes. Definitely lots of life, unfortunately.
Have you gotten at least to be a little creative, I hope? As far as film stuff or book stuff or writing, or have you gotten that, or has life happens been just so onerous in the last several weeks that you've not been able to do a whole lot? Which way has it gone?
Not been able to do much of anything except for just to try to push some, just the daily promotional stuff. It's as far as I get.
Well, tonight you kick back and have a good time and just get some good vibes, because that's what I'm aiming for. I was telling Daniel before the show, I have had the week of weeks, from a very not so fun blood test result thing. It's a long story, but on the health side, I'm gonna have a little bit of an adventure going into December, but with specialists and all that kind of fun stuff. But of course, you're slowly making a little progress bit by bit. You always have that Murphy's Law thing where, you know, the heating element in your house furnace, you know, decides to go out. And of course, the part's a few hundred bucks. So all that little credit card space that you have slowly been paying back. Yeah, it gets hit again. So I was like, oh God, you know, this is definitely not the most fun week so far, but that's the life of an indie creative, you know. You got to be prepared for everything. So it's, I've been looking forward to the show tonight and kicking back with you and Daniel and our guest. And it looks like the chat room is off to a good start. We got the return of Tommy B. Smith, which has been a little while since we've seen Tommy B. And R.G. Westerman finally gets to take a break tonight and kick back a little bit in the chat room, which is awesome. And this is... we've made it through November, but Tommy, there's still another well over a month and a half to go in 2020. Oh, I didn't say that. Yeah, I did. Oh, man. Oh, man. But, check out the chat room if you are listening. It is open. We always take questions and comments from there. So Daniel, any updates on the Magnificent Trolley project, or got anything else for us this week?
Well, been working on it all week and stuff, and got to go up in the morning and pay out more money to get the graphics done on the side of it. I was putting in the floor today and posted some pictures, and a friend of mine said, there goes, were you having trouble putting it in? I'm like, yeah, you know, I've never put that type of floor again before, and he goes, oh, well, you know, I'll just come out there tomorrow. We'll rip out everything that you put in today, and we'll start all over again and put it in right.
Oh, geez. Oh, man. Yeah, I know how frustrating that can get on a smaller scale than you, because mainly, well, a lot of people have probably heard me vent about my ongoing desktop PC odyssey, where I've had just nightmares with motherboards, and that's another one of my fun things this week. I finally got a replacement motherboard in a couple days ago, so hopefully that nightmare, well, knock on wood, hopefully that's over. But yeah, I know what you mean about, take everything out, replace everything, and put it back in. Yeah, I know that all too well. Not fun.
I just installed it today and everything, and got a big chunk of it installed. And he's like, "Oh, it won't take us that long. We'll just take all that back out. You've got to do it exactly right and everything when you do it."
So right.
Okay.
Well, hopefully it'll get back up and running. And at least this week, you're having a better week, because last week you had the vehicle issue and we're not even sure you could make it to the show last week. So at least this week does sound a little better. So there's a silver lining somewhere.
I was late last week by quite a bit, but I didn't make an appearance finally. And I still don't know anything about the vehicle. A week later, I still don't know anything. It's still sitting at the shop, and they haven't told me a thing yet about it.
In a week? Oh, my God. Well, that's no fun. Gosh.
But
I was hoping to have it solved.
I'm looking at having to buy a new vehicle, so I'll trade issues with you. You can buy me a new vehicle, and I'll work on your heating unit.
Okay. Yes. Well, in your case, all I have to do is find a good Victorian era style horse and carriage, and that for you, that's like a state of the art vehicle. So, but I don't know if we have a whole lot of those around here, but I will try, just for you.
Horseless carriage is my style.
Yeah, horseless. Yes. Yes. Which I definitely look forward to seeing that. Again,
you're only talking about $50,000 to $100,000 for something like that, so that's fine.
Well, you'll be waiting a little while, Oh man, yeah. Well, I wish I was in a position to do that, but not quite there yet. Just to put it mildly,
big publisher like you and everything, you're rolling in the dough.
It's tremendous.
COVID year with all the public appearances and all that stuff that we've had this year.
Oh yeah, it's been great. All events canceled and all public appearances canceled and having to tighten the wallets. it's lucrative, all right. that's you got it. Hopefully we'll start making some noise soon here, at least as best we can. It's a new wave of some projects that they're going to start rolling out here just shortly. So, there's just so much going on. I tell you, this is a week for sure. But let's see. Let's go back to the chat room here. We do have Sandy Lenders popped in, and we do have Carol Preflatish. So, hello to you all. And Sandy's got some more fabulous book news. I mean, she's got good news like on a weekly basis. I need to get some of that Sandy Lender luck, I tell you. What's that, Rose?
I said, that's nice. It's good to hear those things. That someone has something going on.
Oh, I know. I have been writing a lot, so that is good. I've just run into troubleshooting pitfall after pitfall. Yeah, so it's not been the most exciting, but tonight we are going to have some fun. It's awesome. And actually Sandy was facing a large weather situation, but it's been it's downgraded to a tropical storm now. So that's good. And so that's good news. So Sandy just knows how to pull in good news all the time. I really need to learn her secrets. Yeah, I'm with you, Tommy. Yeah, he said in the chat room, it's good to hear someone is getting good news.
Right.
Well, I was worried about Rose because it's turning wintertime, and you know what happens if Rose is outside in the wintertime, you know. So.
Right.
Well, am I stove think... guy?
What happened?
My stove died. I just fixed it like a couple months ago, and my stove decided to die while I was making mummy dogs on Halloween.
Oh, Meg.
So,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I had that happen. Holly and I had that happen in like almost like a triplet. We had a washer go down and a dryer go down. And then the dishwashing machine go down, like all within a span of like 6 or 7 days. It was not fun. Mm. So I do understand. I'm an expert at all these kind
washer.
Of disasters.
I had finally replaced the washer a couple months ago. So it was like, hey, can I get a break?
Well, we all need to. Well, we'll have to regroup and get some positive mojo going here soon. Because I tell you. But I mean, I heard the other day too. I was like, oh my God, they even canceled the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. So that's going to be the first year in my entire life that I have not watched that on TV that I can remember, at least. Evidently, yeah. That's what Holly showed me a. Article about that, and I was like, my God, they canceled Macy's.
I thought it was still going on. I mean, Dolly Parton just posted something about her performing for the Thanksgiving parade, the Macy's Thanksgiving parade.
Well, I'll have to find out from Holly because, yeah, she was showing me some articles that were talking about that. So I will have to look. We'll have to look into that, folks, because we don't like to give inaccurate information on the Star Chamber show. We strive for
yeah, or somebody needs to tell Dolly.
Utmost in accuracy. Well, y'all come to Lexington, we'll get Daniel's trolley, and we'll throw an impromptu Thanksgiving Day parade here in Lexington with Daniel's trolley, and that's what we'll do. It'll be a legendary event. But all right, let's see. We got a couple minutes for our guest call, so let's go ahead and acknowledge tonight's sponsors. We have two awesome ones tonight, and, of course, one – well, actually, you recognize both. Definitely regular sponsors of the Star Chamber Show, Ren Garcia and Mary Ann Pohl. So go ahead, and I'll give you the Ren spot first because we always have fun answering the question that he poses at the end of this one. So here we go.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Not at all.
We are weird. Yes, we are weird enough, Ren. Yes, resounding yes. I always love that answering that question. Fantastic. Yeah, I love Ren, and can neither confirm nor deny that he will be popping in as a guest very shortly on the Star Chamber show because he's always got some great activity going on. And let's see here. Now we got. I want to give some recognition to Mary Ann Pohl. Mary Ann Pohl and. And then I will give you an update from Holly. Holly is getting my attention right now.
The parade is going to be virtual and streaming and will be smaller.
The parade in Macy's is going to be virtual. It's going to be streaming and smaller.
So they're changing the route.
They're changing the route.
So they don't, no crowds.
No crowds. No crowds of people. So, to me, that's kind of not the real Macy's parade then. So I go back to my original position there, but there you go. That's the update from Holly. So, but we'll go. We would definitely want to give Mary Ann Pohl some spotlight here as one of our awesome sponsors. And here's a little bit about her. An invisible battle is being fought around us. If we listen closely, we can hear swords clashing in the war for human souls. The Iconoclast Thriller Series is not your typical horror. So, if you are looking for blood and guts, just for the sake of blood and guts, you won't enjoy these books. But if you're looking for frightful stories in which ordinary individuals must face extraordinary circumstances and the supernatural, look no further. Again, that's Marianne Pohl, and you can find her stuff at her website at mariannepohl.com. It's mariannepohl.com. And definitely can find her on all the big outlets where books are sold. Encourage you to check her stuff out. Great writer, great person. And she has a great podcast now about the supernatural. People interviewed on their supernatural experiences. Really, really cool paranormal podcast. Check out that as well with Marianne. So back to you all. And we do have our guest on deck, so I guess we'll just go ahead and bring our awesome guest in here. He is an amazing writer, an award-winning writer now of thrillers, and he is coming out with a brand new book, which is the follow-up to his award-winning novel, Tybee Island H-Bomb. And, of course, now you know who he is, the one, the only, the amazing Michael Houchin. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Hey guys, how's everybody doing?
Hello.
Doing good.
Good.
Hello. Is that Rose I hear?
Yep.
Yes.
Hello, Rose. And Daniel
Hello.
Back in the background?
No.
No, Daniel's not there tonight.
He's
the background, he's in the
Daniel.
Foreground.
Isn't it awesome?
He's in the alleyway. He's in the foreground, the background. He's wherever he wants to be.
He's
you can't stop
he's
Daniel.
Everywhere. No,
but
so
Rose,
you,
yeah, Rose came back
that.
From a little hiatus. It's the, just in time for
oh.
your show tonight. So yes, that's a special thing for sure, and we're all happy to get to talk to you live because it's been a little while since we got to visit. I guess Imaginarium online at least, yeah.
Yeah, boy, I miss that. I miss the face to face. I mean, don't get me wrong. I had fun. It was a lot of fun, but still, just the idea of walking around and seeing everybody and greeting everybody and doing that face to face, you know, I really well. My wife and I, Stephanie, and I, we both miss that a lot.
Oh,
maybe
tell me about
year.
It. Well,
yeah.
We definitely are planning on. We're launching it pretty shortly, but we're going to do a hybrid event. There will be a live convention programming in Louisville. And just as I think by next July should be all right. And if not, you know, we will definitely comply with the you know, regulations on distancing and stuff. It may mean we have to have a limited number of people attending, but either way, there will be a live event planning on that full steam ahead. So yes, there will be an opportunity for that. And for those that would like it, and you know, of course, for some of our international participants, we will also be hosting a virtual convention simultaneously. So, which is almost like double content for registrants this year, because they will have the option of getting both. And of course, with the virtual stuff, they have up to 3 weeks to peruse and view it after you know the live event weekend. So It'll almost be like we're doubling our content. It's going to be crazy, but I think it's definitely going to be cool to have a hybrid event.
Well, that was fun because, you know, I was on a couple of panels and I met some people that I'd never met before and we had a good conversation. And, you know, it was fun doing that as well. So, yeah, thumbs
oh,
up.
Yeah.
That's why you guys did. You guys put it on. You guys did an excellent job making it run. And it went smooth. I didn't have any problems, so. You know,
yeah,
wonder.
There were some people. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Carol. Yeah, definitely ran into some folks that ran into some brick walls on some of the tech side, and that's, you know, that's something that we definitely had a meeting with the Excel Events people about, and definitely noodling through why that happened to some people and what happened. But there were, as you said, you know, a lot of people that, you know, were able to participate pretty smoothly, and it was our first time going through, so we, you know. It was our first, you know, run through of an entire convention virtually. So we learned a lot. And, it's going to be interesting to kind of integrate the two. And essentially, we're going to be able to offer more content. Filmmakers will be double exposed because we'll have on-site screenings, and then we'll screen their films online. We will – be able to double the exposure of exhibitors because they'll have an online space and then a physical space. And, you know, for folks that really want to have just a mountain of content now, yeah, you can you could have a presence in both. And the virtual side, at least, you can, you know, log into later and view those panel sessions, workshops, and seminars, you know, for several weeks after the event. So it's going to be very interesting to put together. It's a bit of a challenge, but, you know, this at least we've been through it once, so we can get that side done. And we've done the live event, of course, many times. And it's going to be a cool hybrid event. And I think it's a bit of a unique setup because I don't think a lot of conventions are going to try to do that. So we are a little bit of a cutting edge, kind of thing.
I think Holly may have told me, or you may have told me, that F. Paul Wilson is going to come back and actually come to the.
Yeah, we're going to bring Paul Wilson back. And we'll have another big guest that we'll bring in too, to, you know, for the folks that, you know, have gotten went to the 2020 event. You know, we'll definitely have some more big new guests announced. But yeah, we definitely want to have him in person so we can honor him in person.
I mean, I started reading Repairman Jack back in the 80s, okay, and I read every novel he put out, and then lo and behold, I heard he was coming. I said, oh man, wow, I can't wait. And he actually came out with another book in December. So I got it. Okay, I read it. I'm going to bring it up. I'm going to get him to sign it. And then lo and behold, we had to go virtual. But I still have the book out, and I'm still bringing it with me. So I can't wait.
Yeah, he is a writer that, Michael Nost, I think, describes it best, but as far as Paul Wilson's work. But he is such a clean writer. I mean, his writing is so tight. There's nothing superfluous in his prose. I mean, everything. I mean, it's very efficient type of prose writing. He's got such a clean style. And I think that, you know, definitely folks can learn a lot from F. Paul Wilson, as far as you know, his insights and advice on when it comes to the craft of writing. So that's gold. That's worth seeing again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But just looking at the chat room for comments about it, and just catching up on that.
So
yeah, we're just talking about.
Who was that?
What have you got out on the new end?
Yes.
What do I have on the new end? Well, let me tell you, we're coming out with the second book, and it's the follow-up book, the Kaibe Island H-Bomb. It takes place a few months after that book ended. It takes place back in Franklin, Kentucky. The name of it right now is called The Death of Innocence. And that really sounds so good. Oh, my gosh, how'd you come up with that? Well, the main character that dies, her name is Innocence. So, again, it's a murder mystery. The whole crew is involved. The crew that was at Tybee is involved. It's very personal. I don't know how much of the plot I need to go into, but Innocence is, if you read the Tybee Island book, you know there's a character in it called Frederick Johnson. Everybody calls him FJ. He's a little person. He prefers to be called a dwarf. It turns out it's his granddaughter that's murdered. And it's up to the sheriff of Franklin, Kentucky to figure out who killed the child. So it was a lot of fun to write, and we're ready to send it out and see what people think.
Yes, it's tonight is the official unveiling of it, everyone, because tomorrow you're going to see the cover art. You're going to see the synopsis. You're going to see it posted in about a bazillion channels on many different social media platforms and websites. And thankfully, it is tomorrow because today the hosting, the web hosting service that we are with had a major server issue today, so I couldn't even get into our sites.
Oh,
so
no.
Thankfully, that is tomorrow, and they were having that. They said that was gonna be all fixed by tonight. So, because I was like, we've got something big that we got to post tomorrow, guys. And yeah, they were like, yeah, it's gonna be some But so yeah, so that's good. But yeah, tomorrow, folks, yeah, look on all our, a lot of different channels for Seven Star Press. Tomorrow Comes Media, of course, my own channels, of course, Michael's. They're going to be on all kinds of different platforms, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I mean, lots of different channels. And, yeah, you're going to see the new cover art, the plots. And, tonight is kind of like the sneak peek from the author himself. So this is actually the kickoff. So this is fun.
The cover, you did such a job on the cover that just, I mean, I look at the covers, I got to, you know, of course, I'm biased, of course, but I'm saying the cover, I got to read the book because the cover is just spooky looking. I mean, I have showed some friends the cover saying, no, this is going to be it. And they said, oh my gosh, it's spooky. And I said, well,
it
starts out that way. I mean, it starts out that way. And FJ, FJ is a character. He is he's like a little baby rooster in the hen house. He's just all over everybody, and he hasn't changed a bit in this book. So he gets beat up and he gets in the hospital. I'll tell you this, and at some point they kick him out of the hospital because he was asking things that shouldn't ask nurses to do in the hospital. So it's interesting. He's fun. Hopefully, I hope I keep you hanging to the end, trying to figure out who killed Innocence. And those that have read it for me, my proofreaders, they've said I didn't know about it until you sprung it on us. And it's not a surprise.
Yes.
I mean, it's not one of those kind of books that, okay, here we're going, and all of a sudden, bang, here's a clue. Bang, it's over. I know who did it. No, this kind of builds, I think, until Ray, the main character, the sheriff, kind of gets an idea of what's going on, and then we learn with him who the murderer is.
And I can vouch for you. Definitely, you did a great job of kind of veiling your big reveal until the very end. That absolutely. And that's something Holly commented a lot about as well. And certainly she was hosting tonight. She would say the same thing for sure. But it's cool. And it's the next step in, if I may use the word, your thriller franchise. And it definitely builds for the readers that love, Tybee Allen H-Bomb and takes that next step. And that kind of gets into, you know, I think that Rose and Daniel and myself I think it'd be interesting to talk to you about the writing of book two compared to the experience of book one. Were there anything that you learned or grew in doing the first book with these characters for the first time? And, you know, of course the thriller genre and everything, what writing wise kind of occurred in book two that may have either surprised you or that you realized areas you grew in?
Well, the setting for book one is there. It's a real place, Tybee Island. And the group, the six of us, the main characters in the book, we've been to Tybee. We were trying to think the other day, maybe 10 or 11 times. And if you don't know where Tybee is, it's right outside Savannah, Georgia. It's a little island. It's about 13 miles from Savannah. And so the setting is there. I mean, I didn't have to build a world. I mean, it's there. The restaurants you go to, the streets, the sights, the sounds, it's there. So I just had to throw the six, the card playing six, into that environment and have something bad happen and see how they figured it out. I went in with Tybee Island knowing how it was going to end. I mean, the government lost the hydrogen bomb there, and somebody's trying to sell it to make a dirty bomb, and there was a kidnapping, and, of course, there's your plot. You got to keep them from, if they find it, from doing their thing, and you have to rescue someone. The second book was different. The second book starts out with the murder, and I'm thinking it takes place in Franklin, Kentucky. Now, if you don't know where Franklin, Kentucky is, it's down I-65, right before you hit the Tennessee line. It's a small town of like 16,000 people. I didn't know much about Franklin. I see it on the street, the road sign as I'm going to Nashville. But for some reason, I picked Franklin. Now, why didn't I pick Owensboro, Kentucky? That's where I live. You know, that's where the group is from. Mm-hmm. And I know every street in Owensboro just about. But no, I had to pick Franklin. So Stephanie and I, we went down and we spent the day in Franklin, going around to different sites, different restaurants, eating restaurants, and finding out some cool things about the city. For instance, there's a church there in the main square that has one of the historical monuments, you know, the big signs. It's where Johnny Cash and June Carter ran off and got married one day.
Wow.
I didn't know that. Yeah, so guess what? There's a place where one of the characters is there, and they see the plaque, and I mentioned it, you know, because, you know, it's really there. So, but the story, back to the storyline, I knew that last chapter, I wrote the last chapter really like first, so I know who the murderer was, but I didn't know how to get from point A, the beginning, to point B, the end. Where in Tybee, I did. I knew exactly where I was going. So it did a little bit of scratching on my part, head scratching. I don't want to go straight from A to B because it could be like 60 pages long and you're done, you know. So I had to throw some things in to kind of take you over here a little bit before I could bring you back to here a little bit. So I think that worked out. I think I gave us a lead. One of the suspects, the main suspect, something happens to him, so he's not a suspect anymore, which surprised a lot of people because they were telling me reading it, saying, oh, I thought that was the killer. Well, obviously he's not. But it was different in that respect. I had to do a lot more, I won't say thinking on my part. I'm trying to have to build a story to keep it interesting and hopefully not put you to sleep or I'm bored with reading this or, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me go ahead. Let me give a heads up, because Holly already knows about this, and I think you do too. I wrote an epilogue, and I kind of cleaned up a few loose ends, nothing much, nothing major, just one or two questions that Stephanie and some others had. So how about this? So I did some cleanup work. So everything kind of went together, tied together. And then I wrote two sentences at the very end that says, okay, Mike, now you got to write a third book. So there will be a third book coming out. I've started on it.
It better
already.
Be.
Well, yeah, you know, the people are going to be upset. So what's happening here now? But I started on it. I did have a little bit of a writer's block. You know, I'm sure I'm not the only person that ever gets writer's block. And I started on the book, and I got about four chapters into it, and I think I don't know where I'm going with this. So what I do when I get writer's block, I normally go out and I'll start writing on something else, just something else. And so I made I came up with this idea of a character that an assassin that has autism. So I just started writing on it, and the next thing you know, I got 66,000 words.
Nice.
I just kind of set it aside, and Stephanie's read it. She says it's good, and I've been marking it up. So I've got someday after I get the third book, I have a present for you. I have another book that's not the same characters, but
surprise! Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's good news. And I think that you brought up a good point for writers. I mean, it's when you are hitting a little bit of that writer's block thing or feeling a little stagnant on the momentum with something, sometimes it is good to have another project that you can do some writing sessions with and just to change the pace a little bit. It does work. I mean, I've always had more than one project going at a given time, so I do know what you're talking about. And it doesn't work necessarily for all writers, but I think, like what you're talking about, I can relate to, and maybe Rose and Daniel are similar. But, yeah, when you got something that you can dive aside and work on a short story for a bit just to kind of, you know, shake things up and freshen up the batteries a little bit. It does play out nicely sometimes, and I think your case is a good example of that.
Yeah, sometimes it's good just to walk away from something for a while and then come back to it. And that's what I did. I'm back in now to the third book, and I'm, like I said, I've got a plan now where I'm kind of going with it. But I didn't at the time, so that's why I walked away. I mean, I sit down and wrote a 1,500-word little story, just bang, 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 just to get my mind going. That was as a mouth of much. Won any awards with it, but it was fun and cute, and but it just helped me. I keep on writing. That's, I guess that's the, you know, the big thing. You just don't walk away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Just, even if, just, if you sit and just type the same word over and over and over, just keep writing, keep that mental thing going.
Yeah, at least get in that writing chair and stare at the screen for a while. That's it.
Yeah.
At least get there.
And
yeah.
And having a strong drink by your side doesn't hurt.
No,
I like a little bourbon and Coke and
nice.
And I can sit there and I can solve the world's problems.
Yes, see, I can do that when I drink bourbon, but I can't write when I'm drinking bourbon. And so I learned that to my I learned that hard lesson when I was back in college, or right before college. I tried writing right when I was a little after 21. I was writing, and I thought, I'll try this. Everybody says that, yeah, writers drink and all this. I'll try drinking and writing, and it was a disaster. So
you come back and you look at the screen and said, nope. What are these words, and what do they mean?
Oh, when I was writing, I thought it was the best prose that has ever been written in American literature, you know. And then the next morning when I got up, I realized it could possibly be the worst prose ever written in American literature. So that was when I was like, nope, I'll just stick to soft drinks or energy drinks, you know, when I write. And now I don't really drink soft drinks, so I just I do cheat. My one vice, I guess, is I do still have an energy drink every day when I do my writing session, but I do sip on it. It takes me like a couple hours to go through a can, but that's my drink of choice when writing. Yeah,
I use our dining room table to write. It's kind of, we have an open concept, and I can sit in my dining room and see the kitchen and the living room. So I've always got my laptop open. It's always something always pulled up. And if I'm walking by it, I can sit down and write down a thought. Or I've been in bed and had a thought, and I'll get out of bed and come in and write it down. Because I will, and I have, woke up in the morning saying, I had a thought last night about 2 o'clock this morning. I know I had something, and I can't remember what it is. So now I train myself. If it's really good, I'll get out of bed and go sit in the dining room and just type it real quick and then go back to bed. But I've always got it open. The laptop is open. Something's on the screen. And, you know, it gives me pause. I'll walk past it, and I'll just sit down and type a little bit. May not have meant anything, but I'm still typing. That's the key. I'm still writing.
Now, where is your spot, Rose? I don't know if I've ever even asked you that. Where is do you have a specific writing spot, or is it multiple places?
The inspiration room. I pretty much live in here.
Oh, the famous inspiration room that we've you posted pictures from there. Yeah.
Yeah,
I know what you're talking about.
Oh yeah.
I've seen the room on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It was the one I'm thinking about. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the more selfie area.
Yeah.
Or
that's similar to. Yeah. Yeah, you do every. Yeah, that's a very. Yeah, the creative space for you. Yeah, it's not just the writing in there. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You've done, it's stuff for all your other spheres of creativity in that spot.
And yoga.
Yep.
And meditation.
And yoga.
And listening
nice.
To music.
Nice.
I don't even have a desk. Like, it's just a open space, and the entire room is like my altar, and each corner represents earth, air, fire, and water. And then I have an area for spirit, and whenever I'm ready to write, I have a folding table I bring in here, and I set it up at the end of my chase lounge. And if I get tired of sitting up, then I'll just kind of lean back and just put it in my lap. And I've got one of those cushy laptop, iPad holder things or whatever that you can put in your lap. I have one of those things. So it just depends on what comfort I need. But, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Like, I think the only things that I've even written this year at all were, like, for the most part, scripts, like just little short scripts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But a few weeks ago, I had a dream that ended up coinciding just so nice with what I was kind of trying to figure out what my exact premise and storyline was going to be for before. So I had my phone there next to me, and I turned it on and put it in my notes, and so I'm pretty excited about it. I hope I get another urge to, you know, get started more on it and work on outlines and stuff.
Very cool.
I've written a couple, I self-published a couple of books that came from dreams. I mean, you know, I didn't sit around during the day and thought of it. I went to bed and I woke up the next day and said, I had a dream last night. And I start writing it down, and those became the plot lines to some books. So I believe in that. I go to bed. Well, when I have my writer's block, I go to bed. It's okay. I'm ready to go to bed now. I'm ready to dream of something. It hasn't worked yet, but I have written from dreams before. I think it does work, I think.
The entire Amulet of Elements was a dream. You know, the initial, just the initial storyline of it, and then it just kind of grew from there, but I would keep dreaming. Or,
yeah.
You know, it was like the characters would just do their own thing in my head, and I would just write it down as it came in. And it's been that way. It was that way with, you know, book two and book three, and so now book four is, you know, falling into place slowly. Very slowly.
Nice. Now, Michael, it's interesting. Yeah, you brought up the some of the other work you've done, because in some ways it's almost like Tybee Island is almost like a relaunch of you in a way. It was kind of like, you know, kind of like you're kind of like a debut in some ways, but yeah, you did have some earlier material, and hopefully we'll be able to have that relaunched at some point. But you did do writing in the speculative fiction genre, which a lot of people may not know that about you. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
No, I wrote a little full book series. They're both roughly 60,000 to 70,000 words. That, the first book took place in hell. The second book was about the first werewolf, how that came about. The third book was a combination of the first two, called Armageddon at the battle. And then the last book was actually takes place back in hell again. So, yes, I was actually into that genre of the werewolves and the vampires. And then for some reason we went to Tybee Island, and I came up with this idea that the government lost the bomb on February 5th, 1958. And no one's actually written a thriller about it. And I pitched it at a convention there, your convention, 3 years ago, something like that. I told Holly, and there was another lady there, and Holly right after said, okay, I'm interested in this book.
Yeah,
and that's when she introduced me to you, and we went off and we talked about our pet, our dogs. And
That was cool. I won't forget that. Yeah, you're awesome.
You know,
that was so cool, our chat. I will never forget that little. Well, it wasn't a little chat. We ended up talking for quite a while, but it was a fun one. That was good, positive vibes. And, yeah, Holly was all about it. She was like, oh, this is great, you know.
And Steffi didn't know I was meeting with you, so she's wandering around the convention trying to find me. And like you say, we talked a long time. And finally I found her, and I think she wasn't very happy that I didn't tell her where I was going.
Michael's gone rogue.
You know, oh my gosh. But you know what? It all worked out fine. Now she's happy. So you know, I met you. I met Holly, and I met you. And you guys, you guys took me off. And I'll be the first one to admit, okay, I am not. I never went to class in writing. Okay, I cannot spell. Steffi will. She will tell you that. I will holler. I'm sitting there working. Alexa, how do you spell this? Or Stephanie, how do you spell this? So, you know, and Alexa's hollering at me right now because I just said her name. But I have ideas. I'm a storyteller. I'm not really a writer. I don't consider myself. But I've been told I'm getting better. And that's always good to know. Someone says, you're getting better. So I'm improving thanks to people like Stephanie and the characters from the book. The characters from the book are actually editing my stories for me. I mean, there is a real life Charlotte and a real life FJ, and so they're actually reading it about themselves and editing it. And then, of course, I send it to you and Holly, and then you guys clean it up, and you make the book, the interior. Oh, my gosh, it looks so great. I mean, so, yeah.
Well, see, I will say that people do not – I mean, once you get into the depths of the publishing world and do what we do, you see it. But there is a big difference when you actually allow books to have, you know, a decent-sized font, decent-sized line spacing, you know, clean, you know, gutters, things like that. All that little sounds kind of dry and boring kind of stuff makes a huge difference when you unfold a book and read it. And I'm glad you noticed that, because that is very conscious and very intentional. Yeah.
I'll put it this way. One word, it's professional. You know, I can look at my first works where I self-published the stuff. You can look at it and say, okay, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. But open your book, it is professional. It's clean. It's perfect. And then here you are. You're sitting there. How many places tomorrow? Tons and tons of places. I would never know where to do that. You know, so I'll say right here now, and I've told it to you and I told it to Holly, I appreciate what you're doing for me. You're helping me. You know, this is one of my dreams in life is to, you know, I'm leaving something behind for my grandchildren. That's why I write.
Yeah.
It's
absolutely
kind of my immortality. You know, 100 years from now, my great-grandchild could pick this up and say, my great-great-grandfather wrote this.
That's awesome.
You know, that's why.
Yeah,
that's
cool. That is a cool perspective, and it's a lot of authors get so consumed about sales, and definitely this 2020 and the way the market's been, it's definitely not been a pleasant year in that regard. But it's important to look at the other things that are rewarding about writing and having books out. And that's cool that you mentioned, you know, one of those very, very obvious examples of why, you know, we do what we do. And that is awesome. That's good. Yeah.
Say what, Rose?
Leaving a legacy.
You know, the spiel you put out, award-winning author. I would never in a million years have used those three words, award-winning author. But, you know.
I know what you mean, Michael. It's official.
Do you,
it's
David?
Official.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear David. Daniel back there hiding somewhere.
Yeah.
But
I'm just listening to everything.
Okay, I want to
talk about Daniel. What you're talking about, because, like I've said many times on here, you know, I failed English 101 in college three times before I ever passed it with a C-. And, you know, to say I was ever going to be an award-winning author, you know, that was like, will never happen. But, yeah,
right.
Look at both of us. Never would have thought it would have happened.
Yeah, I know.
Stephen and Holly saw something in it that we didn't see in ourselves.
Exactly. Holly saw something when I did that little spiel I did. She saw something. And Stephanie, I would give my wife credit for that. I used to paint. I did portraits and landscapes. And she's the one that said, oh, you're good. You need to do this. And she pushed me. She gave me, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, she gave me, you know, encouragement, I guess that's the word. And then the same thing for writing. She said, that's good. I mean, that is good. And I said, oh, yeah, right. There's no really, you're a writer. So she's the one who pushed me. I wasn't going to do the spiel that day up at the convention. It was Stephanie. Stephanie has written a children's book, a couple of them now. She's self-published one. She hadn't published the other one. And she was going to do the spiel, but there wasn't anybody there who wanted to listen to a children's pitch, but yet Holly and this other lady was there, and she said, Stephanie said, go pitch your book. I said, I haven't prepared anything. She said, just go pitch, we'll talk about it. So there you go. I went up, and Holly saw something, same thing probably Stephanie saw. And here it is. I mean, you guys have taken me under your wings, and life is good. Now, I will say this. I am retired, so I don't write. I do want the money. Don't get me wrong. I want that $1 million, Stephen. You're holding out on me.
Well, I hope you certainly do sell a million. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, me too. But
we can afford to get a new computer rather than having to build them from scratch.
There you go. You know, I'm waiting for the Pulitzer Prize, but you know that can happen anytime. But it's fun.
Oh, yeah.
Some people are trying to make a living out of it. I understand that, and they're struggling. I understand, and I feel sorry for them. But I have been lucky. I've been blessed. I get to write for the fun of it, and it's been fun. So I got a few more stories in me.
You better, I want to see that you get up to like the Jack Reacher kind of series and have like 25 books out.
Right. I don't see how people do that can stay fresh with a plot, different plots. It seems to me like the 20th one, I'm reliving the first plot. I've just changed a few things in it. Don't see how people can do that. I'm amazed. So we'll see where Ray Harris takes us. That's the main character, of course, in the Tybee Island.
You got
it. We'll see where he takes us. Because I'm along the journey with him. People ask me, they say, man, I didn't like how you did this. I said, it wasn't me that did it. It was Ray that did it. He told me to write it down. So I'm on this journey with Ray to see where he takes us. So I'm just as excited as everybody else.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So Daniel Rose, I definitely have hit Michael with, I think, an overabundance of questions so far. What would you like to explore with him?
Well, I was curious, now that you have book two that's fixing to come out, and just for yourself personally, if you go back and read them, which one of the two between the first and the second is your favorite?
Oh, wow, that's a tough question.
Just to sit down and just to open it up, just to read them, which one is your favorite?
Oh, wow. I would think the first book, Tybee, because it was, I think so. Because I did a little bit more of introduction on the characters, and you get a little bit more feel for the characters. And I think even though there's some, but the dream sequences in the first book, there's a dream, actually two dream sequences that I thought was awesome. There is a dream sequence in the second book that I think is pretty cool, too. But boy, I tell you, Rose, you ask hard questions. probably the first book. Yeah. Don't let her ask any more questions because I can't answer. Okay.
That is why Rose is one of our co-hosts. She brings the tough questions that
man.
We need. Yeah, we
she
don't make
tough.
It too easy for you.
She is tough.
That's why Rose is
on
top of the game here.
Can I tell you something about Daniel? Daniel, back here listening. I'll tell you something about Daniel. Is he gone?
No, he's lurking. I know he's lurking.
He's
lurking.
He's
always lurking.
I'm here.
I met Daniel the first time I was there, the first convention, and we were a couple of panels. And then I think he's the coolest guy in the world. I love his hat and his mustache, okay? I love it. But he's just a nice person. You know what I mean? Okay, am I ruining your image, Daniel? I'm sorry if I am, but he's just a nice person. I like hanging out with him when I was there. So anyway, there's my thing. I still. Rose sat down at the other end of the hallway, and I didn't get to see a lot of her, but maybe more next time.
Yeah, maybe next July. We can all have What's that, Rose?
I was being sarcastic. I said, wow, that's the opposite of what I usually hear.
The opposite end of the hallway. No, not the opposite. No, not that. No, you were way down yonder.
You normally hear that I'm not that nice, Rose. Is that what you're trying to say?
No.
Well, anytime you see a Facebook and he's standing there holding a meat cleaver, you got to start wondering, It's just. But anyway.
Everybody has to have a hobby.
You know, right.
Mine is cutting up dead animals. You know,
oh, I could have went somewhere else with that.
We won't ruin your bad boy image, Daniel.
Okay, no, no. I don't do anything good about you anymore.
As a kitten, you are.
Oh, it was too good. Too good. Too good. So, Mr. Dark?
Yeah.
You gonna now? Rose has asked Michael the tough question. Are you gonna up the ante here, or are you gonna give him a softball?
I'm gonna lob one into him and everything, and you know, hopefully he can knock it out of the park.
Oh,
when you're sitting there thinking up the problems that you have with like Tybee Island,
mm-hmm.
and all the different things that went through that, you know. That escapade.
Right.
Where did you look at to find the most information that you could find on what happened?
Well, when it comes to the actual event on Tybee Island, the actual event losing where they lost the actual bomb, I watched the documentary on, I think, Discovery Channel. They gave it like a 2-hour documentary on it, and you actually saw the plane and the pilots and the co-pilots, and you actually heard the story about it. And it just intrigued me how we could lose a hydrogen bomb. Of course, it's not the first one. I think we've lost like 6 or 7 of those things out there that they're still out there. That could be a series. Go around to every hydrogen bomb, try to find it. But so that part wasn't too bad. Then you do a lot of Googling and you look at the historical accounts. But after that, it's pure imagination on where you want to go. You know, you got a plot almost laying out. You got a dirty bomb out there waiting for someone to find it. And yes, in the documentary, there are two men searching for it. One is a retired military guy that he's worried the terrorists are looking for it to make a dirty bomb. He wants to find it. The government doesn't want him to find it. They think it's buried and it's encased in mud. If you move it, it could leak plutonium, the radiation. That's real. And I actually worked, of course, different characters into the storyline and different things. But it was actually an easy write as far as but trying to get to humor. There's humor in that book, I think, with FJ and some people trying to get his autograph, and in the second book, I think there's humor in it. I try to make it humorous, so it's not, you know, just too straightforward. Blah 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 blah. I always have somebody I think in there for comic release. That's important. Dan, to answer your question, it was actually it started out with that, and of course we went down there and I talked to people about the bomb, and majority of the people on the island have never heard of it. Now the old timers have. There's one restaurant there that actually have a section set aside. I bought myself a Tybee Island H bomb T-shirt. So they had little pamphlets about the bomb. So I asked questions. We were down there this summer. We went back to Tybee, Steph and I. And well, the six of us, we went there and ran over to the mayor's office. She was out of town. The mayor of Tybee Island's a part-time job, so I talked to her assistant. I left a book for her, for the mayor, and for one for the library. I talked to a couple shops. I think they got a hold of you, I think, about maybe selling the book. They wanted, you know, be the only one on the island selling the book. I said, I don't have a problem with that. But I did. I left a copy with the mayor and the library. We met a guy from the what was the place the lodge he was at? VFW? Was it VFW? We met him outside the mayor's office, City Hall, and we just started talking to him. And he's only been down there for like 5 years, but he's heard about the bomb, and they invited me over to a VFW meeting to come over and have some beer and talk about the bomb.
Nice.
Oh,
yeah, beverages,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
So, yeah,
anytime you can capitalize on your writing to get free drinks, I mean, that's an extra perk.
Hey, is that a plus or what?
That's
a
plus.
They have a farmer's market down there. It meets at the lighthouse, beautiful lighthouse, which plays a part in the Tybee Island book. But they have a farmer's market there every Tuesday, I think, and Thursday. And I was invited to come down and set up a booth and, push my wares. So we might do that maybe next year. I don't know. It depends on what the virus is doing. But, I'll go down and set up a tent and hopefully sell a couple books.
Well, hopefully you'll be such an icon by then that the mayor will be like, well, we're going to have to put up this Michael Houchin statue, you know, here on the main drag strip or whatever they got down there.
Key to the city.
Yeah, key to the city. That'd be great if the key to the city is in the form of an H-bomb.
That would be hilarious. That would be hilarious. Yeah. You know, I can wear your little chain, little collars around your neck. But I'm ready to go back to Franklin, Tennessee, where the second book takes place. And there's
Franklin, Kentucky.
Don't get confused with Franklin, Tennessee, bigger town.
Yeah, that,
but Franklin,
that's close
Kentucky,
to me.
Yeah, legendary Kentucky Downs, man. Legendary racetrack with the uneven racetrack surface.
It's like the British racetracks. It's not an oval
like
you go to Keelan or something. It actually starts out, it goes to the right, turns to the right, and then turns circles back around a big loop back to the beginning. So it is totally different. It's turf. It's all turf. We go down here and play the – they have slot machines down there, but of course you can't have slot machines in the state of Kentucky. It's illegal. We don't have a license. So they said they're not slot machines. They're based on horse races. I said, wait a minute. No, I put my money in. I pull the arm. I lose. That's a slot machine. You know? So we go down there now and then just to play the slots. But, Kentucky Downs, you pass it on 565 going – right at the state line.
The Downs. Yeah. It's I've always thought with that uneven track and everything like that, I've always wanted to do like a comedy, slapstick comedy movie in the vein of, if you remember Major League, the baseball movie with Charlie Sheen back in the day.
Yeah.
Something that's got that kind of humor set at Kentucky Downs with the uneven racetrack. just have fun with it.
Awesome.
Yeah, as compared to like, you know, at the bougie places like Keeneland and Churchill Downs, you know. It'd be fun to contrast them.
Jockey that wins the race.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Riding the mule.
Michael has to get his own. Michael has to buy his first racehorse and, you know, call it Tybee Island or something like that.
I can see it now. I have real long ears. You know, we call them mules here in Owensboro. But I could get the FJ to be the jockey.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Could definitely. Yeah, as far as the height and weight kind of requirements for jockeys, that would actually work. So, hey, maybe you're onto something.
It sounds like a plot.
A segue novel. That's why we're here. That's why Daniel and I are here tonight to help you brainstorm.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, that's God.
Write that one.
Yeah, Rose is wondering, why is Stephen laughing? Why is he laughing? We will have to take you to the Downs. You will understand, Rose, when you see a racetrack that has an uneven surface.
Wow.
They used to do steeplechase there.
It's more like a steeplechase track than a racetrack, but you know.
Yeah, but they've taken that out. And it's all turf, and it's you go down there, it's not crowded. It ain't crowded at all. I don't think nobody knows.
Oh no,
The thing is,
15 people.
Huh? What did Rose say?
Rose?
They should be jousting.
Jousting. Oh, that would be grand.
Oh.
Now
we
got
it.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm gonna put that in my, I'll put that in my parody screenplay. So I'm going to do one on
that
the down sometime. Oh, God.
That would be funny. Yeah.
I worked for years in at Keeneland in the broadcast department, so I was around the high end of horse racing, you know, the very chic and bougie level, and there's a lot of humor when it came to the track surface of the downs with the kind of tilted kind of track surface. Yeah, they had a lot of fun with that, but yeah, I got my story idea while I was working there, so I will write that down, Rose. We need to have a jousting day in my film.
That would be funny. That'd be cool.
That would be awesome. I already had ostrich racing down.
Go ahead and bought Michael a horse while you're up there this week.
Oh yeah. I couldn't afford the minimum. The minimum is $1,000, and the reason is because that deters, it's sad, but it deters people from buying them for taking them across the border for horse meat. I'm not kidding about that.
Oh.
That's why they have the $1,000 minimum on horses, and I don't think that's changed since I've worked there. But the minimum at one of the auctions in Keeneland, at least, was $1,000, and unfortunately, that's I'm still not able to do that. So
yeah,
Michael's out of luck.
And still get one.
Well, Michael sells a million copies of Death of Innocence. Maybe we can do it.
We'll buy your horse then. How about you help me sell a million. I will buy you a horse.
Well, get me a horse. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. Oh, man. And then the names
like,
I would come up with.
Did you see any of the sales this week?
I did not keep track of that.
One of them was about $2 million for the horse that she is 1.95. But she missed the big sales, the ones that go like $8 million, $10 million and stuff like that for the horse.
First 2 days,
but,
2 to 3 days, yeah. Yeah, those sales, the first couple days is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was there, like you'd walk the concourse. Like I'd take my break. I was a technical director, and which means that I worked the switching board and called the video shots. And yeah, we'd walk the hallways, and you'd literally almost bump into like Sheikh Maktoum, the Crown Prince of Dubai. Okay, then you'd walk past him, and you might run into Terry Bradshaw, it was like it's crazy. The kind of people that kind of cluster in for those first couple days of that sale, because that's when you routinely have horses in the several hundred thousand dollar range, and then you get the ones where I call the ego buys, because only a few people can bid that high, and then believe me, they do it largely for ego, but yeah, they get the several million dollar bids, and it is something
like
to watch. I mean, it is
that bought the horse there. For $8 million, just because she liked it, she thought it was a pretty horse.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. No, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And but the other end of the sale, you do get the $1,000 horses, and it's fun because the Amish actually come in and buy a lot of horses toward the end of the sale, and it's great because the way I look at it is that's for them. That's kind of like buying a Ferrari to get a thoroughbred. Like $1,000 or whatever for them. It's like a like buying their Ferrari or Lamborghini, but it is a hoot to kind of watch the Amish bidders and stuff when they come in toward the end of the sale when the horses get a lot less in price and all. But it's uncanny how many stakes winners and even some Derby winners come out of that group. That's only, they might spend, $50,000. $100,000, that zone. You will find a ton of winners, and you'll find so many of those multi-million-dollar buys pretty much flop. A lot of them do. I mean, they're not that great, but so that's why I said it's more of a status thing in some ways with the really super high end bidders. the Sheik Maktoum types, you know, the ones that come to Keeneland and bring their own, you know, airplane. Yeah, he was interesting because he had two 747s. He would bring one that had him and his crew in, and then the second 747 was for the horses to take back overseas, you know, when they were done with the auction. But yeah, he would just walk around in like a polo shirt and, you know, just normal looking guy. Of course, you knew that there were security somewhere near him. You knew there were, because I mean, you're talking the Crown Prince of Dubai. But yeah, he just acted like a regular guy, dressed regular, and real, you know, very very nice guy too. He's known to be a very good tipper to help there and at restaurants around the area and things like that. So yeah, he was a really generous guy too. But yeah, it's just one of the many big folks that you do see kind of going around that sale the first couple of days. But yeah, we got a little off track there, but yeah, with the downs is a whole different ball game than Keeneland. But
yeah,
but
we went from the downs to the Saudi prince there. That's a big chance.
Yeah.
Well,
it's
like last year. I told my wife. I said, "I go sit on your hands. Do not rub your nose. Do not do anything. Sit on your hands while we're in there."
Yeah.
We do not have the money to buy a $300,000 horse today.
No.
Yeah. No. No, it's something else though. Yeah, Rose, you would love it. Yeah, the auctions, it is something cool to witness. Yeah, Daniel and I have seen it, and I know Michael may be familiar a little bit with it. But yeah, someday you got to come up and check it out because it is a spectacle.
Yeah, I've never been to one, but I have heard of them and actually seen some on television before. There was actually shows.
They have more money
than
know what. These are people that have more money than they know what to do. I swear, it is wild. You know, watch $100,000 bid increments. You know, more money than I can make in a few years, and they just do it like boom, 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 boom. It's just like,
it is crazy. I feel so sorry for them. I feel so sorry. For them.
Yeah. 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 They're not. They are. They are hurting.
Somebody's got to do it. They volunteered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Daniel will have to get his horses for his carriage from a Keeneland auction one day. That'll be the next goal that we'll have to do.
There you go.
That would be fun. Oh,
well,
man. So there you go, Michael.
I put him in for a Parisian or something like that, or a Belgian for mine. So.
Right. Oh, I love Belgians. Uh-huh. That's my favorite breed. Yeah, Belgian draft horses are my absolute favorite horse breed. Love them. Yeah,
well,
I don't know if you have a favorite, Michael.
They are so calm and everything. It's like, you know, they come out of the womb, you know, bomb tested.
Yeah.
My dad, when I was growing up, we used to, I don't know if you ever went to a pulling contest. It's where they take draft horses, they hook them up to a sled, and they pull concrete blocks. And whoever can pull it the furthest wins, basically. And they put a lot of concrete blocks. My dad was a hookup man for a farmer here. And they had the big Clydesdales. I mean, each horse weighed like a ton. And they would back them up to the sled. They hook the sled off, and they pull them. They just pull them until they couldn't pull anymore. I mean, it looked mean, but the horses, that's how they were, you know, that's what they were bred for. It was the labor. And one year, I'll never forget, I was about 10 years old. So that was, you know, 100 years, 120 years ago, I used to go around my dad, and my job was to hold the horses waiting for their turn. Now, you got to realize, I was a little guy, and these horses were standing over 6 foot tall, weighing a ton each, and I'm just holding them by the reins, and they're just standing there. I mean, if they want to, they could pick me up off the ground, and I had so much fun, and of course, they got paid in silver dollars when they won it. And Mr. Hetty was the man of the horses. He gave me a silver dollar for every pulling contest he won. And that year I had over 35 silver dollars. But these horses were big and massive and beautiful. And because we were talking about horses, that's my favorite horse. Those big old.
Nice.
I mean, they're workhorses, beautiful animals.
Yep. Yeah, the Clydesdales
come down to Columbia during Mule Day and everything. You can watch some pulls down there where they – they have the sleds down there, sort of like the tractor pull sleds that they hook up these horses to, or these mules to, and they pull, like one of them last year was like 3,200 pounds or something like that, that they were pulling, or.
Oh, it's nice. It's an unbelievable amount of weight. I mean,
Yeah, they are incredible.
Yeah,
Keeneland brings in the Budweiser Clydesdales. Yeah, Keeneland brings in the Budweiser Clydesdales, and they do a little display every usually I think it's a spring meet that they come in. But they that's always kind of fun to watch. But yeah, Clydesdales, English Shires, Percherons, Belgian Drafts. I mean, those are my kind of horses. they're gentle giants, laid back, and a lot of fun. The thoroughbreds are not too friendly. They tend to be a little bit of rascals in a way. Yeah, they will bite you. Yeah, they're not as friendly as draft horses. You think the big ones look more intimidating. Yeah, but they are actually big gentle giants. They are just awesome. Yeah, I like the temperament of the draft horse. I've always thought it'd be awesome to have draft horse races, and that was one of my things in my script for a Downs-based movie, Belgian draft races, the Downs.
Well, that would
be awesome.
Yeah.
Da-dun. he'd feel the ground shake. That'd be awesome.
I'm trying to picture that. Oh, my gosh.
That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, I could be the jockey on one of those.
Yeah, me too. They can even carry me. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a good deal for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But the speed, the timing, the records would be a little different from thoroughbred races.
They'd be long.
But I do encourage you though, to look into that, because that would be a blast to have your crew from Tyvee Allen, H Bomb, and Death of Innocence down at the Downs. for like a full on adventure.
They live there. They live there.
Yeah. Would have a whole plot line involving the horse industry and stuff like that. That'd be awesome. Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah, we I think you ought to explore that, maybe.
That's a thought. That'd be different.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Too fun. Well, we are coming up on about 12 and a half minutes left of the show. So, chat room, if you got anything, and hello, Kenzie Michaels. Didn't get a chance to give you a shout out on air yet, but you're in the chat room now. If you got anything for Michael, please post it in there. I'm keeping an eye on comments there. And, is there anything that we have not covered tonight yet about the new book or anything else going on with you that you wanted to make sure gets out?
Now you're asking me that?
Yes, you.
me? Oh, that's right. Let's see. No, I think we covered it all. It's first off the cover. It's wonderful. The first time you sent it to me, I showed it to everybody. And at the six of us, the Tyvee Allen six.
Tyvee Allen six. They got a name, a club name. That's awesome.
Yeah, we're gonna get t-shirts. Tyvee Allen six. But
it could be a cult thing.
Oh,
yeah, a cult thing.
Yeah,
cult following for Michael Houchin.
Yes.
Send me all those cards and letters. It does. It's the same characters, I think. I think if you liked them in the first book, I think you're going to love them in the second book. I do introduce some new characters into the storyline. One is I don't know if I should give it away or not. It's a fling that FJ had when he was in the circus. How's that? And they got together and they made the daughter Betty. So. Who's Innocent's mother. So she comes, she shows up, which really SJ doesn't like, but she's a new character. She's becomes a major character in the book. it's a fun read, I think. I think it flows. I think everybody says it flows real well. And I hope I keep you on the edge. I hope I do keep you on the edge. So If you like Tavi, I think you'll like this book.
Mm-hmm. And we are unless Ingram screws up, which I don't think they will. Yeah, this book will be released on November the 25th, which comes out just in time for, of course, the crazy weekend, Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, and Cyber Monday. So no matter which of those days you shop on, you can pick up a copy to send to your family, friends, and significant others and everybody else. Yeah, definitely.
Are you going to do a Kindle pre-order?
Yeah, we'll have that as well. It'll be a short window, but we'll have that up. Because this is like I said, it's a time. The releases are now coming out. We were talking earlier about some music releases. Starting to see bands starting to release stuff. You're starting to see more movies coming out. Yeah, the mm-hmm. market is finally kind of opening a little bit because, early in the year it was just a disaster to put new stuff out. And, doing that. It'd be like that scene from History of the World Part 1 where the guy's trying to release the dead birds. Hey, fly!
Yeah.
He throws the bird out.
Fly.
Clunk. that's kind of the problem with putting out new stuff in the middle of that the worst part of the COVID zone, as I call it, from 2020. But this is it's looking a little better, so I think that stuff that is rolling out through the end of the year and just beyond is it's definitely gonna be a better climate. I mean, obviously it's not the perfect world, but it's certainly a little bit better than it has been. So that's I think the buyers will be a little more likely to pick up some stuff. So it's a better time.
I got several positive feedbacks on the audiobook of the Tavi Allen. There's some people that don't read but they did listen to the audiobook and they said they loved it. So that was a positive thing. It was a lot of fun put together, but some definite positive feedback.
Very cool. Should have mentioned that. Yeah, you do have an audiobook version available for Tavi Allen, H-Bomb, mm-hmm. and soon, hopefully, we'll be able to get the other one produced. But this one will be out in print and ebook. So that'll definitely hopefully satisfy at least most of the readers, and then the other one other format will become available shortly thereafter, and off to the race as we go. But
not at Kentucky Dance.
Yeah, we'll go for more for a Keeneland type race.
There you go. Let's go Keeneland.
Yeah. It really is folks, I know y'all hear about Churchill Downs, because they host the Derby and all that. But if you want the nicest track in Kentucky, no comparison. Keeneland is the nicest track in Kentucky. And, they've even used Keeneland as a movie set to represent other tracks in the country before. I think the Secretariat movie, was it? They used Keeneland as Belmont. I forget.
That's right.
I think it was Secretariat. Yeah. And they shot at Keeneland actually. So because it's just first class. I mean, it is beautiful. It is classy. Landscaping of the place, they have their own landscaping department. You want to go to a place that's just a quality, nice place. I mean, experience, really top notch operation. I mean, Keeneland is it. So we will use Keeneland as our metaphor for Michael Houchin books. That's what we're aiming
there you
for.
Go.
Yeah.
Well, I've been to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, Ellis Park down in Paducah. That's a racetrack down there, and of course Kentucky Downs. But the prettiest one is Keeneland.
Yeah.
That's the one to go to.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Keeneland had
to.
The Breeders' Cup this year, as Carol said. Carol pointed out, Keeneland did have the Breeders' Cup again this year. Second time in recent years that Keeneland has had that. And they did install, a lot of temporary seating and stuff to take care of the bigger crowds, because that's always been one of the things that plagued Keeneland, was they didn't have the seating capacity. I mean, you get crowds of 30,000 there regularly on Saturdays and stuff for meets. But, the Breeders' Cup is gigantic. So, they put in extra seating so they can seat 50 or 60,000, I think. So. Good stuff, though. Yeah. So,
yeah.
That's the Houchin vibe. Yeah.
Yeah, and you go through Keeneland, you know, you're going through the horse farms. I mean, it feels like a race country, you know. You go to Churchill, you got the airport, and you got the subdivisions all around it. But you go to Keeneland, you're actually driving through the park. It's manicured, and the fences, and the horses, and from the different farms, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, you sit in the grandstand at Keeneland, you're looking out on the rolling kind of farmland beyond it, on the other side of the track. And so, you're definitely getting the more of the horse farm kind of feel. And, of course, if you drive around Keeneland and visit, you know, the Keeneland extensively, I mean, it's landscaped beautifully, and it's right in, like Michael said, it's in the middle of horse farms, and it's just, it's a different
ballgame.
Right
up there, too, so. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're right across the street from the airport.
That's right. You are right across the street from the airport, not far from UK.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Yeah, they built the airport to service Keeneland, basically. They put it right across from Keeneland so that, the breeders and the horse sellers and all could easily, fly in and get over to Keeneland. That was actually part of the reason that the airport was located where it was. But, Daniel does point a good thing. On the other side of town, we do have the horse park, which is also something to go see for sure. It's a great horse park, and they have hunters and jumpers out there. If you've seen, talking more of the European style thing where they go around a ring and they're jumping over like obstacles and stuff like that. I did some video work in that one
of
younger years. But it's
the retired racehorses too out there. So.
Yep. And they also have a lot of the other breeds. So if you want to kind of go learn about different horse breeds, they have like a draft horse barn, things like that. So you can go learn about different horse breeds, and they have little demonstrations, and it's a really nice park, And, but that's out Ironworks Parkway and all that area on the north side of Lexington. So that's definitely worth a visit. Good stuff. But yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Daniel, because I'm proud of Lexington. We got some cool stuff here. In addition to basketball, bourbon, and craft beer, we have great horse parks and stuff too. So,
you also have a cigar name up there too.
Well, we will when you get here.
No, I'm talking about you do right now, Henry.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I was thinking that was a good segue to hype you, though, with your new trolley.
Henry Clay Cigars, it's named after Henry Clay. Which was very, noted person, in history.
Oh, yeah. Yep, Henry Clay House is open for tours. Great place historical houses.
I believe it's his granddaughter was one of the women that helped push the suffrages.
Yeah, Daniel actually probably remembers Henry Clay in person from back when you were a young guy. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Daniel's 200, so he goes back about that time.
I'm thinking he'd be about 200 years old, Well, he doesn't look a year over. He doesn't look a year over 190.
No. He's young. He's young for his age. He looks
young
for his age.
Age. Yeah.
Right. Well, Michael Houchin, we're coming up on a minute 30, so I want to make sure that you get to tell folks where to find you online.
Well, the easy way, of course, I'm Facebook. You can come out and look for Michael Houchin on Facebook. But you can go out to Seven Star Press. That's where you will probably find the most of me, right there.
All right, and that's
that.
And Houchin, spelled Houchen, Houchin. And
it's
definitely.
Like it's like the Indian greeting, how, and the pointy thing on the end of your face, chin.
Houchin, yes.
That's it.
That's awesome. But, all right, well, I will go ahead and I will sign off. And then, Michael, you go ahead and give your last comments. And then Rose and Daniel, take us out. This is Stephen Zimmer. And next week, Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, we have another Star Chamber Show live episode to look forward to. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening tonight. And over to you, Michael, and then Rose and Daniel.
Okay, I want to thank Stephen and Rose and Daniel for letting me come and hang out with them for a while, and especially this opportunity to to talk about the new book, the new release, and I'm so excited, and I hope to maybe I get together with you guys again, just sit around and we can chit chat. So thank you, Rose and Daniel and Stephen. Rose, it's yours.
Yes, it's so nice to speak with you again, and congrats on the new book. I'm so excited for you, and you know I'll be sharing it tomorrow. Daniel?
Thank you.
And for all of our guests that are listening to us right now, we appreciate you. We are here for the creatives. So until we get to talk next week, be creative. Daniel Darka, signing out.